Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
This is episode 96, everyone.
All right, 96. I thought it was 97, girl. So close, girl.
So close. Pearl, see, y'all, like, Pearl's just excited. Maybe it is 97. I don't know. Hold on. I'm about to check.
There she go. Well, I mean, you already have it saved, so I mean...
Right,
wouldn't it let you know if you have a double?
Well, I might have... Yeah, it's got to be 96. Anyway, you guys, we're back to episode 96. Pearl's just trying to rush us on to get
to 100, girl.
So, yes. And I want to give a shout-out to Shoshana Bean, who is going to be on later this episode. Remember last week, we had the first half of our episode, and then I told you guys... In a shocking twist, she called me back and was like, wait, there's more. But wait, there's more. And it's very exciting because Pearl, this week, she shares information with our listeners that she has never discussed with anyone publicly.
All right.
About her career on Broadway.
So, y'all, we got an exclusive for you.
We sure do. And, Pearl, I also...
Oh, you told me about this last week, actually.
Yeah. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, girl, I'm juiced. So, yeah, I'm going, yeah, I lived.
So, also, the reason that we brought Shoshana on to begin with, besides the fact that she...
Is amazing
and everything.
And has such vocal talent.
Yes. Is because she and Tony Award-winning actress from The Color Purple, Cynthia Erivo, released this amazing viral cover of Taylor Swift's I Did Something Bad. And last week it was, like, pushing towards... 500,000 views. This week, it's pushing towards 1,000,000 views. It is getting bigger and bigger. And I introduced it to a friend of mine, my friend Billy Thomas at the from the Castro Country Club. And he texted me today. He's like, oh, girl, I'm obsessed with this. Well, get this, you guys. It was just confirmed this afternoon that on next week's episode, which is coming out right before Christmas, we are going to have... Tony Award-winning actress Cynthia Erivo is going to be with us.
Oh, Cynthia Erivo.
So, and this is the cool part, because apparently Shoshana might have put in a good word for us or something, because girlfriend is in Japan on tour right now, and she is going to Skype in with me so that we can do the interview, you guys. It's going to be very, very exciting. If you have not heard Cynthia and Shoshana's cover of Something Bad... But Taylor Swift, go listen. It's so worth it. I performed it over the weekend. It was amazing.
So, lovely.
Speaking of the weekends, Pearl, how did you spend yours?
I worked every day this weekend. Both me and you had the show over at the Lookout with Carney Asada.
We sure did.
Shout out to Carney for having us.
I'm back with Carney, actually, this Sunday at the Port Bar in Oakland. So
lovely. After that, I went straight to Asia Steph and spent... the entire weekend working at Asia. So that was, you know, that was cute. I actually will be there for New Year's Eve. And apparently New Year's Eve is like a huge night at Asia. So.
I'm sure. It's like, you know, it's a huge night everywhere, but presumably someplace like that. Yeah, absolutely.
I've got to find a cute, like, not that I don't have cute gowns, but I've got to find a nice gown to wear because I guess all the ladies wear gowns on New Year's Eve.
Girl, how are you going to perform on a bar top in a gown?
No, I mean, it's what I would be serving in.
Oh, stuff. Okay.
I still have my costumes and stuff for numbers, but like, yeah, I'm excited to spend my first New Year's at Asia. So that'll be fun. If you guys want to check it out, go online at asiasf.com to make your reservations, or you can give them a call.
So you have been there a few months, and I'm really curious because for people who know of Asia SF because... of the Fuse Network television show Transcendent, There was a lot of drama happening there. Have you encountered drama in the time that you've been there?
No, I have not really. Not real drama, really. Like, it is intimidating to work there because all of the women are so beautiful that work there. I've had more issues with some of the customers than I have the other staff, so.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, again, like, you mean, have they been touchy-feely or have they been invasive?
Just their language and their ignorance of not knowing how to speak to trans people, mostly, being misgendered in a place like that frequently.
I'm telling you, girl, it comes with the territory. They trot you guys out like zoo, like an exhibit at the zoo. And so people come there because they want to see real live transgender women in their natural habitat or whatever.
Right.
You know,
right,
like,
exactly.
To some degree, it is how I feel when they bring these fucking tour buses through the Castro, you know, with all these tourists from God knows where. And and you know, as they pass in my head, I'm imagining like, now you will find the homosexual.
The homosexual part of the city. It's the Castro. Like,
here we see the homosexuals acting in their natural manner when in the wild.
Right.
Look, two gay males kissing each other. Those are not men, actually. Those are lesbians. You know, I mean, it's like...
Right.
I just feel that way. So it goes with the territory, but...
Well, no, I was definitely aware and prepared for it, but... I'm just saying...
It still gets taxing.
In the sense of drama, there's no... Like, I haven't encountered any drama. I've just had more issues with the clients than the actual girls. You know what? I should... I know I've mentioned this before. I should try to get one of the owners on here so we can...
Well, yeah.
Have him talk about it. I know he had just posted something today, actually, because he was actually really close friends with Mayor Ed Lee, who just passed this morning.
Yes.
Or last night. So
technically, he passed this morning, but yeah.
Yeah. So he had posted something like pictures of him visiting Asia and him on the stage talking about something. But yeah, I'll try to see if I can get him on. That'll be fun. Yeah. I rarely get to talk to him. We've had short conversations here and there, and we recently had a conversation about like him finding out that he's gay. So for those of you that don't know, the owner of AJSF is a gay male.
Okay.
He
found out he was... Did somebody inform him?
Like, well, I mean, coming out,
like...
No, not coming out, just coming to a conclusion that he was gay. You don't just say, oh, I'm gay. Like, you have to, you know...
Right.
Puberty hits, you realize who you're attracted to, you're finding out that you're gay.
So,
attracted to men.
Okay.
Would you not call it that? What would you call it?
I don't know. I mean...
Self-discovering you're gay. Whatever. Same thing.
Yeah, like, I mean...
It's the same thing.
For me, like, I would use the term realization versus, like I said, that's why you're like, when he found out he was gay, I was like, oh my God, somebody told him?
I mean...
Could you imagine me like, you're gay.
Well, I mean, hey, have you ever
felt... I mean, honey, that's what they did with me all the time.
Exactly.
Hey, girl, you're gay. Right. Oh, how dare you?
Right.
I remember when...
And it's really nice that I get to talk like that because so many people, like, ask me, so when did you find out that you were a transgender woman? And it's the same thing. Like, I get to use that language back now, you know?
Right. Well, I remember years and years and years ago, I was in college. And ironically, when I moved to San Francisco, I was walking down the streets one day. And this person, who I'm about to tell this little story about, when I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, lived here. And he's a sister of Perpetual Indulgence named Sister Sybil. Sybil Wrights.
Is it
S-I-B-L? Sybil Liberties. Sybil. Sybil, like Sybil, the person who's got many personalities.
Is it spelled S-I-B-I-L?
I think it's S or C-Y-B-I-L, maybe.
I may know the person via Facebook. Who knows?
So, anyway, so he and I worked together at a Chess King store.
A Chess King store. What is that?
Chess King was like a brand of clothing. It was very popular in the 80s and into the mid-90s.
Girl, I'd be forgetting how old you are. You was working in the 80s. All right.
I was actually working in the 90s, but... because this was like 90, 92, 91, 92 maybe. Probably 92, 93, 94. Regardless, we work together at a Chess King store, and I know that there's some of you out there who are listening who are old AF, like me, and you were like, oh, girl, not the Chess King, bitch!
Right.
Where everything was, like, mustard, eggplant, and turquoise. Like, those were the popular colors.
What kind of store is this?
Those were the popular colors of the day, and everything was, like, Z Cavarici. It was a very...
Turquoise, what? Eggplant?
Eggplant and mustard.
Oh, I was going to say, it's the color of your shoes.
The colors that we had, we had suits on the whole back wall. Mustard, black, in case you need to look.
Oh, so it was a formal turquoise.
No, girl, like, remember, like, MC Hammer would wear, like, a suit jacket and his pants?
Yeah.
Well, people would also wear, like, a suit jacket and, like, really, pants that were very similar to an MC Hammer pant without the drop crotch. I would have to show you. Go watch a Belle Biv DeVoe video or something.
Belle Biv DeVoe.
So, but regardless, we worked there, and he was openly gay at the time. He was out, and he had a boyfriend, which worked for us. We were all coworkers, and I was like, oh, you give him all the best shifts. And anyway, whatever.
Oh.
Anyway, I said something about, like, asking him a question about them being gay, because I was not out at the time. And he was like... he said something. Well, he's like, well, of course you know what it's like. And I was like, no, I don't.
And he was
like, what? I was like, I'm not gay. And he's like, oh, honey, I've got gay friends that act straighter than you do. I was beshrieked.
Clocked.
Beyond beshrieked. So
clocked.
So anyway, we still laugh about that every now and then when I see him. So shout out to Scott or Sister Sybil.
You have some nerve. You should have just kept that mouth shut, bitch.
Oh, my God.
Y'all know Pollo can't do that.
Whatever. So, as Pearl mentioned, joking aside for a moment, when I woke up this morning, it was all over the news that San Francisco's Mayor Ed Lee passed away.
He had a heart attack in the grocery store, girl.
At a Safeway.
The one over on Monterey.
And he, really? Right over here?
Yeah, apparently he goes there all the time, and it's, he goes there late at night, and he was with his wife, and he had a heart attack.
Had a heart attack at Safeway. He was rushed to the Zuckerman, the brand new Zuckerman General Hospital here in San Francisco, and one of my drag children works there. And while she didn't give me any, like, specific details, she said that he arrived there around, like, 10:30, something like that at night, and they did, in her words, everything humanly possible and plausible to save his life. I mean, like, you would presume that they would do that for anyone, right?
Right.
But when the person coming in is the mayor of the city, you're like,
we need to do something.
Really, right. Bitch. We need to really get this together. So he did pass away. And this morning, it was announced that the president of the Board of Supervisors of San Francisco,
Nicole Breed.
Yes, London Nicole Breed.
That last name, girl, gets me every time.
Well,
anyway.
We were talking about this today. I was like, I'm sorry, London Breed sounds like the name of a bareback Treasure Island media porn that was filmed in the United Kingdom.
Right.
It sounds like...
But she's going to be taking over for the rest of his term, and if she does well, she can actually run again next term.
Well, she had already been talking about running, so...
Well, hopefully she does well enough to actually go through with that.
She is a 43-year-old woman of color who was born and raised in San Francisco's Western Addition in public housing.
Yeah.
So she is... a native San Franciscan, and it's very interesting to note that San Francisco has a populace of 6% African Americans.
Yeah, I just found out that...
6%!
Right. I found out today that a third of San Francisco is Asian.
Yes. One third of San Francisco is Asian, 44% is Caucasian, 16% is Latino, and then like 6%. 6%. Is African American.
Girl, it's time for me to go. I'm from here and everything, but it's time for me to go. That's what that means. Jesus.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, I met Mayor Ed Lee on two, maybe three occasions that I recall. Very pleasant individual, very nice. all of this. I did not particularly agree with his politics.
Mm-hmm.
I would and intend to support a long-time acquaintance of mine. We've worked many times together in various capacities. Former Senator Mark Leno,
mm-hmm,
is going to be the current plan is that Mark Leno will run for mayor, at least. God, could you imagine all these people who are sort of like gearing up and sort of like, you know, you're planning things 2 years out,
mm-hmm,
from this thing. And then all of a sudden the mayor up and dies.
Right. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say up and dies, but dies.
Right. Well, and something that I think is slightly interesting to note is that though Ed Lee was elected for his second term, his first term started when Gavin Newsom, our then, mm-hmm, mayor, became the lieutenant governor of California.
Right.
So he went in for part of a term, was elected, did part of a term, and then passed away while on the job. You know, it's like, I'm sure that people are like, besides the personal impact of this, people are probably really curious where the direction of the city is going to go in terms of politics, because while everyone pretty much who's associated with San Francisco politics are all quite liberal, Mayor Lee's was listed by or considered to be a technocrat, meaning that he was really focused on the technology element of the city.
He was really for all the techies that are here in San Francisco now.
And
really supported that. So I think it's going to be a really interesting shift with London Breed being a San Francisco native.
It could be very interesting to see where a person who was raised in public housing considers our priorities to be, too. And I would probably lean much closer to where she is on that than where I was, regarding Mayor Ed Lee.
Yeah, most of the people I know definitely would back London before Ed Lee in the first place, but we'll see.
Well, Ed Lee was very, very strongly affiliated. Some people quite critical of the fact that he was so closely associated with, let's just say, individuals within the community in Chinatown that have been labeled almost a mafia. Yeah. Girl, if you don't think that's real, bitch.
I believe. Well, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, come on now. Like, so he had, there's some very specific, very, very, very wealthy Asian business people who were supporting and backing him. And,
mm-hmm,
and so that brought him under a lot of scrutiny. It does, you know, ultimately, none of which detracts from the fact that it is tragic that an individual passed away so unexpectedly at 65 years old.
Yeah.
So.
65, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It means that I've only got another 20 good years.
20, girl. You got a good 10 years left. But you know what? That's not true, because I have coworkers that are in their 70s.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
Who knows?
I know lots of people who are like...
Mario could die tomorrow, bitch. Who knows?
So could you, bitch. She could die tonight if she keeps this shit up.
Well, quite honestly, like, I'm only supposed to... My life expectancy is only 5 more years.
I set a timer on my phone. So...
Oh, God.
Oh, shit. Anyway, so in addition to working with Pearl on Saturday... At the lookout, I was back there on Sunday morning. Okay, you guys, my weekend was a little bit crazy because I did the show with Pearl that she talked about earlier with Carne Asada on Saturday. Saturday was SantaCon.
It was. Ew.
Saturday was SantaCon, and that means that San Francisco is overrun by alcoholics dressed as Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, there's only so many drunken Santas one can deal with in a day, but...
The gag is, I made this joke, like, while I was at the show on Saturday, and Kat Rowe showed. At first, laughed, and she was like, oh, that was kind of dark. But apparently, the creator, or the person who made up SantaCon, really hates what it's turned into. And well, I was
wouldn't anybody?
Right, exactly. And I was thinking,
let's get boozed up and dress as Santa.
Santa Claus, right, a mess. And I was like, well, that goes with a lot of things, you know, with people who create things. They end up hating things. I mean, I don't know how many of you guys have met my dad. And she was like, oh. And I was like, come on, that was funny. But she, yeah.
Well, Kat Robichaud was at the show, and she actually was so sweet. She sent me a message on Facebook saying how much, because she was sitting with a group of people
that were from out of town.
The guy from North Carolina, she was sitting with a friend from North Carolina, a woman from Australia, and another guy who was also from somewhere else. And they were right at the front table. Listeners,
did you rape them, girl?
No, I did not rape them physically, but I definitely raped them emotionally. Because listeners out there, if you ever go to a drag show and you're unprepared to deal with incessant bullshit and being like having attention focused on you, don't stand or sit at the very front table right next to them. They were right there.
Girl, and don't be in a building where I'm going to be at, because I'm going to go all around the entire goddamn place and flirt with everybody.
Well, I made them a huge part of my act, because the woman from Australia was with the guy from North Carolina. And I said, oh, honey, no, let me explain how this works. I know that you're from Australia, but you have to understand, in the United States of America, we have a list of states where it is acceptable to find a spouse from. Like, North Carolina isn't quite Alabama or Mississippi, but girl,
it's over there.
It's still, like, pretty high up on that list. And I said, bitch, so much for coming here to get a better life. Oh, you know.
But that's the truth, though. North Carolina is shit, girl.
And then again, actually, North Carolina is not half as bad as South Carolina, but
I don't fuck with the Carolinas.
You
guys can quote me on that. Fuck it, girl.
Well, North Carolina is actually rather liberal in pockets. Like, they're because it's a well
in pockets. Fuck it, I don't fuck with them.
I know, but they're very well educated.
Like Florida.
There are very well educated pockets of North Carolina, and actually
in Texas, girl, too.
Texas is a whole different story, honey. Right. And Texas would tell you they're a whole different story, because they consider themselves a different country, basically.
They need to be.
Texas considers itself its own country. And you know, it used to be.
Right, and there's a... Well, I mean, I was reading up on something that said that Texas is one of... it was something about, like, the five states or something that might succeed from whatever, and Texas was one of them.
Oh, I'm sure. So, Texas... Listeners, I grew up for 8 years in Texas, and so I went to, like...
Makes sense.
I had, like, Texas history and all this stuff, and Texas, at one point in time, considered its own, like, little nation, sort of, pretty much, mm-hmm. And then when we won Texas from Mexico...
Yeah.
That changed everything, but...
More like, from Mexico.
Mexico came by it in its own way. Like, you know, Texas sort of considered itself its own thing, and then whatever. But California is another state that
was stolen from Mexico.
That too. But has been suggested we secede from the United States.
Yeah, we were the actual number one on the list.
Well, of course, California is by far the number one, because in terms of economics, we could actually survive as an independent country.
We make a lot of money for the United States.
So that is definitely, yeah. So SantaCon was whatever. It was a mess. But then from there, I went down to work for Peaches Christ Productions at their Pam Ann show at the Castro Theater, which was lovely just in terms of getting to see so many people. I actually got to hang out with Bob the Drag Queen for a little bit.
Okay.
She was down there, and for the most part, poor thing, she's traveling so much, she was just exhausted, and...
Better sleep on that plane, girl.
Honey, she was sleeping on a couch, girl.
There you go.
She was, like, trying to catch up, and I don't blame her one damn bit. So, that was really nice, and then I didn't get out of drag, so I was in drag from 11 o'clock in the morning until almost 11 o'clock at night. Then I came home, ate, unwound, went to bed at something like 1 o'clock, and had to be up and getting back in drag by 6:30 in the morning so I could be over at the Castro by 9 in drag, ready for the Santa Skivvies run. Santa Skippy's Run was so much fun. Did you see pictures of me on a Segway?
I don't even know what that is, bitch.
The Santa Skippy's Run was over 300 participants this year. It's people who dress up in festive holiday attire, particularly quite often in their underwear.
Oh.
And then they run this little route through the Castro, and it raises money for the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. Okay. So this year, there was over 300 active participants.
How much money did they raise?
And they raised something like $100,000, almost $100,000.
Sickening. Come on, 300 people. Y'all did it.
Yes, it's pretty incredible. And Suppository Spelling and I were on Segways, you know, those two-wheel things. I got 10 minutes of training on a Segway, and then they put me on one in high heels in full drag and let me loose on the streets of San Francisco. Bitch, I was driving on every sidewalk. I was like, oh, sorry, honey. Oh, I'm coming through. Excuse me. Pardon me. Oh, God, on me. Oh, God, get out of my way.
I don't think they realize how old you were because of all the makeup, girl.
Oh, my God. Well, luckily.
It's one thing, you know, sometimes older people, it takes them a little bit longer to learn technology.
I was bomb on that thing. By the end, I was like, I looked like...
By the end.
No, like by the... Well, at first I was like, I was capable at first, but by the end I was like able to do it with no hands. I was able to like do it with like one leg extended behind me, looking like a figure skater.
Oh, God.
Girl, because I was wearing like that red with the fringe, and it looks like a figure skating outfit. So I was like serving that Nancy Kerrigan realness bitch before she got her knee taken out.
Weren't you blonde?
I was blonde.
So that would be more like Tonya Harding, bitch.
Well, that's really appropriate because I'm about to fucking take out both your knees, bitch.
Can we talk about that though? I'm kind of conflicted about. So do you know about the new movie?
I know about it, but only a little bit.
So there's a new movie that's supposed to be...
Tonya Harding.
Yeah, it's a new movie about Tonya Harding's life and the whole Nancy Kerrigan scandal and all that. But I just feel it's
so... for those of you who are really, really young, Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan are two Olympic figure skaters who are going to compete...
Both American
against one another and...
On an Olympic level.
Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan are two Olympic figure skaters who are going to compete
on an Olympic level.
Yes, at the Olympics. And Tonya Harding paid somebody to take out Nancy Kerrigan's leg, like hit her in the leg.
With a hammer, girl.
Come on now.
Fucked up. And I just don't, I don't know. I think this movie should only be happening if Nancy Kerrigan is getting this money because it's fucked up that she's going to be able to get all this money from something that she did that was fucked up to another person's career.
Right. Well, you know, there are a lot of places where an individual cannot benefit financially from a crime. Meaning, for example, if you commit a crime and they make a TV movie about it or whatever.
That needs to go to a charity or something, bitch.
Hopefully, there could be some kind of legal consequences from this where Nancy Kerrigan can be like, by the way, bitch, I'm now filing a civil suit against you because...
I hope she does because I do want to see the movie. But I
have seen no promos for it.
So. Oh, it looks good. It looks good. I saw the trailer.
Well, girl, luckily you saw the trailer now because about 2 years ago, Tonya Harding was living in it, bitch. Okay! Right.
I'm also really bitter because... Nancy Kerrigan was like in my top three favorite figure skaters. It was Christy Yamaguchi, Michelle Kwan, and then Nancy Kerrigan. And then Tonya Harding's jealous ass came up in there and wiped her out.
Well, she just looked like white trash even from Go. Tonya Harding just looked like white trash, bitch.
And the thing is, she kind of was. She kind of came from that. And they kind of talk about how she didn't have the look because she kind of came from that. Whatever, trying to throw the sympathy card at the bitch. Bitch, I don't care, girl.
Yeah. Like, I mean, no. I do understand.
Being an underdog.
I understand that. Yes, absolutely.
That's one thing.
But the facts of life are this. We all at least say we would like equality. I don't really think people really want true equality because that means that everything would have to be equal completely, and people are too competitive. People want to get ahead. They want to be better than somebody else. They want this stuff. But ideally, we would like to all feel equal. But, girl, people aren't created equal.
Right.
Some women have big tits. Some women have no ass.
Some people are born into money. Some people are born broke.
Some guys have a big dick. And other guys I won't date because they don't. But... But the facts of life are that things are not created equal. So just because you come from some situation where you're disadvantaged does not entitle you to fuck things up for other people.
Right.
Like, that's really what it comes down to.
Right, exactly.
Like, just because, you know, because that mentality is the same thing that, for example, makes people, like, want to go rob somebody. Because, like, in their mind, you have too much and they don't have enough and... You like, I deserve to have some of this, and you could spare this. Well, motherfucker, I could spare it, but it's you didn't pay for it, and I'm not going to give it to you.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, everybody, like, so many of us have much more in life than we need, technically, but, girl, like, I've been, like, busting my ass to get what I got, so
girl,
you can
I'm
do
working,
the same.
Like, 3-4 jobs, right, I feel it.
So, yeah, I mean, I definitely do think that there's something to be said for the concept that... This kind of borders on this idea that people have had for many years about the way, for example, the media sensationalizes and puts on a pedestal people who do, for example, mass shootings and things like that.
Right.
And they give them this level of infamy that somehow, some way, to certain individuals reduces the fact that they are either a murderer or some kind of... Like, here's a bitch who, like, straight up had paid people to assault... Another woman just because she was good at what she does.
Right.
Which one of them's got the movie about her, bitch?
Right.
The one who's the criminal. Like,
fuck that. It's not okay.
You know, what I would love to see at the end of this is at the actual premiere of this, Nancy Kerrigan just comes by on a fucking pair of rollerblades and just beats the fuck out of her.
I would live.
Whack!
I would live.
Oh, my God. Everybody would live, bitch. That'd be well worth it. And the judge would be like, In this situation, I think you got it coming, bitch.
Right. I hope she's at the premiere. I really do.
It is. It's really, really weird that, I mean, like...
That's like them putting on, well, I mean, it's not the same because people died, but if they did a movie about Columbine and then sensationalized the shooter, did they?
I'm sure that they did, but if you really think about it, there's dozens, countless, like dozens is like way understatement, countless films about famous murderers.
Right.
You don't know a single thing about any of the people they kill.
Right.
Like, all you know, like, they don't focus on the poor helpless victims or,
right. Unless
you know,
Jesus Christ.
And, you know, it's a situation where the whole movie is about the killer and, like, what kind of crazy they were, and you get to see that. Nobody, like, knows the name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only situation that I can really think of, for example, where somebody who has been immortalized for being a killer has, where we know a lot of the victims or whatever, is, like, Charles Manson. And that's because he killed some famous people in a famous setting. But without that, like, who did Ted Bundy kill?
Right, I have
some sorority girls, that's all you know. And this person and that person. Who did Jeffrey Dahmer kill?
A bunch of gay men.
Who did John Wayne Gacy kill? Like, you can go through the, like, list of infamous serial killers. Girl, how? It's like weeks before Christmas, and we're like, and I'm like, ow, and this!
Right.
Whatever. The point is that, ideally, she shouldn't make a dime. They should give her minimum wage for any hours that she spent doing this, and be like, sorry, bitch, the rest of it is going to go to pay for... Obviously, outstanding hospital bills for lost wages and income earnings. It should go all to all of those things because, you know...
Her career was taken from her, girl.
I mean, granted, it made her equally famous, too, in many ways, but not in the way she wanted to be.
Right.
You know, I had barely heard of Nancy Kerrigan before all this went down. And
what? I was a huge fan of Nancy Kerrigan, girl.
Well, I'm not a figure skating fan, so...
I used to love them.
Aside from...
The only part of the Olympics I would watch, the figure skating.
Gymnastics is fun, too, to watch or whatever, just because of the fact that, I'm sorry, but those children are, like, out there doing flip-flops and, like, all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that there's a lot of stuff that I just can't be bothered to watch. Girl, I do not need to see you swim 150 yards or whatever. Like, no, bitch. No, ma'am, Pam. It's not that interesting to me. But, you know, like... How about, you know, the Olympics, they now have, I don't know what the hell it's even called. They have, like, these people who, like, sort of do gymnastics, but they have, like, a, what the hell is it called? Like,
a streamer
thing? Yeah. Like, girl.
I'm not sure what that is.
I don't know. Like, they got a ribbon on a stick, bitch, and they're like, you are the Olympic ribbon on a sticker.
Right.
I don't even know what that's called.
I never really got into sports, girl, but figure skating was my tea when I was younger.
I do not follow most sports. About the only athletic event that I follow is professional wrestling. Ooh, which, by the way, you guys, I'm so excited. Yesterday, I interviewed Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte Flair, the one who I showed you with no hips.
Oh, okay.
But she's like...
why did you have to pause before you said that?
Because of the fact that I'm like, oh, God, what if they hear this? Because that's so shady to say. But,
right.
But anyway, she is the most famous woman wrestler in the entire world.
Is she?
Well, she is... Well, she's the daughter of Ric Flair. She's a five-time champion.
But the thing is, I wouldn't have known her by name, like, over someone like Sable or Chyna. You know what I mean?
Right. But you are... You are caught in a generational thing because you have not.
I stopped.
You stopped watching.
I stopped when Chyna left, girl.
and RIP Chyna.
Right.
So, right. I mean, I definitely understand. Like, there's been huge professional wrestlers from every generation, like Fabulous Moolah and Wendy Richter from the
80s. Them too. Like, they were.
Lita and Trish Stratus from the
90s. Oh my goodness, I loved them too. Well, I didn't actually like them, but I knew who they were.
Sable and Chyna, and by the way, I don't ever consider Chyna a female wrestler. I mean, she...
Why, like, would you not? Well, I mean, she's a wrestler.
Right, exactly. There's, like, there are female wrestlers because they only there are wrestlers, and, right. Like, Chyna was presented as a wrestler because she wrestled men, she held male championships. Do you know, Charlotte Flair, quite honestly, could, like, buff up just a little bit more, and she could probably hold a male championship, too. She's 5'10". She's taller than some of the men.
I'm sure she's still somehow involved with wrestling. Jacqueline?
Oh, yes, Miss Jacqueline. Jackie Moore.
Did she go into wrestling men? Because I knew that was something that she was starting to get into when I left.
She did end up wrestling men. She was a muscle, like a bodybuilder, a female bodybuilder who did professional wrestling. Lord Jesus, she had the biggest breast implants.
She was yoked, though, girl.
Yes. She is retired, so...
Wasn't she just given, like, some award or something not too long ago for something?
She might have been, but she was a little bit older than some of the other women that she was competing with against at the time to begin with. So, anyway, I had this opportunity to interview Charlotte Flair for my wrestling podcast, and that was just really exciting because... Like I said, being able to interview, and to your point, I will say, the most famous, biggest name in women's wrestling today, in this generation.
Okay.
And that's kind of saying something, because the women of today are kicking ass. Like,
yeah, they have their own show now.
Well,
they have, like, their own reality show, they have their own...
Yes.
Some of them have spinoffs off of that and stuff, from what I understand.
Yes, those are the Bella Twins, and, like, again, I barely consider... Yes, I guess they're technically wrestlers, but I consider them personality, you know what I mean? They're,
one,
like...
personality.
But, and definitely at this point in their careers, they are more personalities, because they're more focused with their reality show on their lives with their male WWE superstar boyfriends and husbands.
Right.
But Charlotte Flair and... a performer named Sasha Banks, who is a really beautiful African-American girl, or maybe mixed race, I don't know, it doesn't matter, who is the niece of rapper Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg's niece is a wrestler?
Yes, ma'am.
Coming through.
And she, and so her name is Sasha Banks, the boss, Sasha Banks.
All right.
And the queen, Charlotte Flair, headlined a major wrestling pay-per-view by wrestling in a cage against each other, like a Hell in a Cell. They tore that shit up. They're doing things that no women have ever done before. Anyway, it was so exciting to me. So, I got sidetracked. We went straight from talking about the Olympic-level ribbon on a stickers to women's wrestling. Mm-hmm. All right, you guys, we're going to take a little bit of a break. When we come back after this, we are going to have our first celebrity interview on. We're going to finish off that amazing interview. Wait, no, instead of going, we'll save Shoshana Bean for the second half. Let's go to our dildo interview.
Oh my god, I was gonna ask you when I got here if you got the dildos.
We did not get dildos. You guys, I was so mad because Pearl and I had a 5-minute gag fest that we ended last show with and I fucking lost it. So they did not get to hear any of us going over the Wet for Her website. None of that. You guys, we were gagged. You need to go check out wetforher.com.
And that's spelt for, right?
And it's spelled out F-O-R, Wet for Her.
And what it is it's a website that sells sex toys for lesbian women or...
Lesbian women.
Or trans men.
Well,
lesbian women for lesbian women.
Yes. Or trans men.
Yeah, because they can use it too, I'm assuming.
I mean, yeah, they have a full line of, like, harness-type underwear.
It's everything, girl.
Girl, they have all kinds of cute... I was telling Pearl, I was like, you could get yourself...
Right.
A trans male boyfriend, and he could just be booty-banging you. You'd be like... He'd be getting it from both ends. You'd be like, ooh, oh yeah, honey. Ooh.
I can't. But girl. I can't wait to get these toys and see them.
She's like, I can't.
You guys,
I could if I tried.
Wait. Oh, wait. No, it was, I have to find this website because I found a website, a friend of mine showed it, of these really expensive sex toys that have real diamonds and gems and stuff in them. They look like weapons, girl.
Say what? Bitch, I am not sticking no diamonds up in my vagine.
I am, bitch. I want a diamond up my poonan. Why, girl?
No, ma'am. See, this...
Someone come and find this diamond, bitch.
Okay. I can't do that, girl. I throw, like...
Diamond in the rough, bitch.
In the very rough. I'm... Whatever, honey.
Anyways, I'm gonna get that website for you guys. It's quite amazing, but...
If Pearl's as tight as she says she is, we'll just throw a piece of coal up there and let it turn into a diamond.
Stupid.
But I'm expecting that what we'll see is 7 dwarves come walking out.
It's really incredible. I'm gonna try to find it while we're on this break. But until then, you guys go to wetforher.com and check out their harnesses and stuff. They have all kinds of neat stuff.
We will be back right after this with Alice from Wet for Her telling us all about her inspiration. Bitch, like I said last week,
they will be good Christmas gifts, guys.
Yes, honey, you can. You didn't hear last week I said, and if you want to stuff my stockings, be sure to use Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lube.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm Poya Delmar, and I approve this message.
I live.
All right, you guys, we're going to have Alice from wetforher.com right after this. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. For all of your personal lubrication needs, from silicone and water-based lubricants, anal creams, masturbation lubes, as well as a full line of male enhancement products, find Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants at a fine retailer near you. Hi, this is Poyo Del Mar. And if you want to stuff my stockings this Christmas season, please, by all means, use Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
How are you?
I'm very good, and you?
I am doing great. This is going to be so educational for me, this conversation. Well, I mean, I visited the Wet for Her website, and
yep.
I was looking through your products, and there's just so many questions that I have. I mean, we're talking here about sex toys between Belgian lesbian and an American drag queen, and I don't even know that much about... And I don't know that much about sex toys to begin with from my own practice. So one of the things that I definitely took note of is one of the things that you guys stress about your products at Wet for Her is that they're by women for women. And that would seem very helpful, but what would be the primary differences between products that are made by women as opposed to products that are made by men?
Okay. Women's know what women like, you know. It's like guys know what guys like. So when you have products made by men for women, they really miss something in the product. The thing that the thing that the, the penetration is the most important, which is not really, in fact. So they think that the diameter or the length of the toy is the most important thing, but it's not. So that's why by women, for women, it's important.
Right. I mean, I definitely know that in the world of heterosexual sex, men, of course, because it's their penis, want to believe that the penetration is the most important thing, and quite often they miss the areas of the women where the women actually get the pleasure.
Yeah, correct. Like, a heterosexual guy will think what a straight woman like, you know, what she's going to enjoy in terms of pleasure. But when you ask a straight guy to think about what two lesbian girls would like, I think for him it's very difficult to understand what two lesbian together will like and enjoy.
Of course, because he's not involved.
Yeah, and it's for me like, and it's for me the same. Like, if I had to imagine what two gay guys would like in sex, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you what toy I could create. I have no idea about the pleasure between two guys. So I think it's the purpose of what for her is creating dildos by women for women, but by lesbian for lesbian also.
There are so many things that I found really interesting. I mean, I noticed that your sizing is based on number of fingers.
This is how we start, you know, we do fingering, so we know exactly what our partner likes, if two fingers is too much, or maybe three is not enough, so it gives a scale of the size of the dildo.
I was scandalized, Alice. And one of the things that you guys really strongly talk about on your website and in the marketing for your product is the fact that you're destigmatizing sex toys. Because, I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm like kikiing and a little embarrassed to be talking to a total stranger, for that matter, about sex toys. But that's one of the real goals of your company, is to destigmatize the sex toy industry.
Yes, the thing is, if you are looking for a realistic dildo with veins and balls, you can find it everywhere on every website. We wanted, as two girls together, like, we don't really want to have a dildo with veins and balls because we prefer women, you know? So
right.
Why would we bring something that looks like a guy, you know? It just, like, doesn't make really sense. So we design our product to be more design, and from there it's easier to look at their website, you know, it's softer.
It was very interesting to me in that regard, because that's one of the things I certainly noted right away, is that it specifically says, like, it's not realistic looking, and I can appreciate that, because if male anatomy is not a turn on in the community, yeah, that you're gearing this towards, then that certainly would not be instrumental. It would not be a turn-on visually.
Yeah. Exactly.
Your toys are, like, very space-age looking.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was like, Barbarella would want to get fucked by this. This is great.
Yeah, it's, We designed them really to fit the woman's, you know, body. Like, we designed last year or 2 years ago now, I think, the Fusion sex toy. It's on the front page, in the best-selling on the left. So the Fusion sex toys, instead of having a flat base, which gives no pleasure to the girl wearing the strap-on and the harness, with the Fusion sex toy, now the girl that is wearing the harness has some pleasure. This took like a century to have something for, you know, to create a strap-on harness, a strap-on dildo that gives pleasure to both of the partners.
So all of your sex toys are intended to be strap-on items, because I saw that there's a whole array of harnesses one could choose from as well.
Yeah, most of them, yes. Yeah, for the moment. We have new products coming next year, and it will not be strap-ons or harness or double dildos. But yeah, today we have the classic range that what the girls are looking for, strap-on, double dildos, etc. Yeah.
Okay, I have to ask you how it is that you woke up one day and you were like, you know what, I am going to make sex toys. This is my calling.
How did I wake up this morning? Yeah, sure. I woke up in the morning and I was at that time working in the hotel industry, like, you know, 5-star hotels. And I was just like boring, not very fun. I was thinking about what is missing in the lesbian industry, you know, what is really missing that I could do where I have something to offer, to create. And then one day, a few days after, with my girlfriend, we went to a sex shop and we were looking to strap on dildos, like I think like almost all lesbian couples. And the only thing that was available was, you know, realistic dildos, balls and veins, and it was on the back of the packaging, you know, those porn star with long hair, but nothing that was for lesbian couples. So I started to look at on internet and nothing existed, so then I created it.
I guess that's really the way that everybody should think, to be honest. If there's something out there that I want that's not available for me, obviously it's not available for anybody, really. And so I can make what I want.
Yeah, the thing is, you need to have quite a market to buy it. Otherwise, it's not going to last very long. But if there's a market, even if it's niche market, then yeah, sure. Today, with the internet, we can create whatever we want as soon as there's a market for it. And we don't need any more, you know, distributors and all this long process that was 20 years ago. But now it's, you know, you have an idea, you create it, you put it on the internet, and then you target it to your market. And that's the revolution of internet today.
Absolutely. And that's the beautiful thing about the internet, to be honest. Yeah. There was a time when, especially as people within the LGBTQ community, where we would have to, you know, if you were in an isolated area, for example, you may never encounter other people like yourself or with your same, you know, whatever it is that your personal desires are or your personal perspective on the world is, you may never encounter other people like that. But because of the internet, it has created a global community of people that can share their needs, their concerns, their experiences.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you were, 20 years old, when I was going out, you know, in clubs, in gay clubs, and you wanted to buy, I don't know, this jean or this T-shirt because it was cool, it was like a nightmare. You had to do all the retailers, all the shops, and you couldn't find it. So, yeah, internet today is just, like, so amazing for us. It's you just need to put it on internet, do a bit of PR and social media, and then you can reach your community. Yeah, it's really amazing.
So I'm curious about your own coming out story.
Yeah.
So what was that experience like?
What, coming out of my company or coming out of me?
You coming out as a lesbian woman.
Yeah. It was quite easy. My mom was really open about it. So I think I said it when I was about maybe 18 years old. And she was fine with it. It was not so difficult. And then my girlfriend was really welcome in the family. So, no, quite easy. Really cool.
It's whenever we hear coming out stories, like, I think we always want to hear like the traumatic coming out story, but it's wonderful when we hear the occasional wonderful and easy coming out story.
Yeah. But the coming out of my company was a bit more difficult. It took me 3 or 4 years to say to my mom that I was doing sex toys.
Yeah. How did she respond to that?
Yeah. So she was okay again. I think she's looking at the business side, but I think it's not as if I was selling, you know, chocolates or jeans. She doesn't go on the website to check, you know, my products. So there's, you know, this thin line where, you know, she doesn't want to come into something too much intimate.
Right. But, I mean, mom needs to get with the curve, because obviously what for her products could be appealing to her, too, if she allowed herself to be.
Yeah, she could. But I think, I think she would feel a bit weird, you know, to check my product and ask questions about it and how does it work and why and et cetera. I think it will go too much in my sexual intimacy or any, you know. Yeah, I think that will be strange for her. But now, as a business perspective, it's fine.
How does one go about figure? I mean, I mean, obviously, you probably can under. I mean, you know the sexuality and the anatomy of women because you're women. But how does one go about actually physically testing products and, you know, figuring out what the actual shape should be? I mean, do you have like a diagram of a vagina? I mean, I'm.
we have friends. We have like 6 couple friends that are doing testing for us. So we have nice dinners sometimes talking about the new products coming out. So, yeah, so I design the new toys, I come up with an idea. I start to design it with my designer, which is a lesbian, and then we have prototypes that come out. And when we're happy with the prototypes, then we do, I would say, nearly a finished product, but it's still a prototype, but it's a prototype that you can test. And from there, we send it to friends, they test it, and they come back with their feedback.
That must be one very happy test group.
It is really funny. We have really good, yeah, that's really fun.
I mean, it's not like ice cream testing, you know what I mean? It's like, this curve doesn't work for me, it's like, you know.
Imagine 12 girls in the same place talking about sex toys and what they think about it. So, yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely. I'm sitting here, honestly, it's kind of blowing my mind, the idea of what a test group for dildos is like. Honestly, it's something I've never thought about. You know, you know that every product that goes onto the market has to be tested. It has to be. And
yeah.
I've never really thought about any sex toy test group. And now, especially knowing that it's geared specifically towards lesbians, I mean, one would assume that, like, a normal dildo, they'd have, like, some gay guys in there, some women, some, you know, whatever, but this is just, like...
Yeah.
Have you ever considered putting out a product, and then the prototype comes out, and the women are just like, nope, this doesn't work?
No, I think you're taking too much risk for that, because when you do a new product, it costs, like, 20,000, 30,000 of, $20,000 or $30,000, so you cannot take the risk to produce something that won't work. It will cost you too much money.
Right.
And then the reputation is going to be, you know, bad. So.
Well, I mean, I'm just talking about getting it to the test group. The test group's like at dinner. It's like, by the way, that just really didn't touch my spot or whatever, you know.
Oh, yeah, but then we can change it. We still have, you know... then the designer can still, we still can change the toy to the feedback of the girls. We didn't invest so much money so far.
Right.
So, yeah, like, I don't know, if the curve is not good, we have like 6 couples and 4 couples says, no, the curve is not good, it doesn't touch my clitoris, etc. Then the designer is going to redesign. We reproduce a test product, and then we send it back again.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Damn that curve.
And that's women's. So it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, I, I'm What did your designer design before designing sex toys?
You want to know? He designed some mobile phone for Sony Ericsson at the time.
Oh, okay, so she went from designing mobile phones to designing sex toys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's a lesbian, and she still design, you know, mobile phone and helmets and kitchen utilities, you know, like molds and spatulas. She designed a lot of things. And I met her I think 6 years ago now, and she's. This is also from where Wait for Her started. I needed to find a designer, a lesbian designer that would understand what I'm looking for. I couldn't, you know, design sex toys for lesbian by, like, a straight girl. She won't get it. Or, you know, straight guy, he won't get it neither.
So that's very interesting to me. Why would a straight girl not understand a sex toy for women? Is it because of the idea of lesbian sexuality?
Yes, she will not know how to please a girl. She will know, a straight girl will know how to please a guy. But how to please a girl, she won't know. She needs to learn. Like a straight guy. Would a straight guy be a good first, you know, a straight guy know how to make love to a gay guy? Do you think? At the first stance, like that?
Well,
I'm not sure.
I would think that a girl, like a straight girl, would know how to please herself with a sex toy.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be. I mean, I think that would be beneficial. I don't know. I'm certainly not questioning. It's just these are all things that Alice, I've never thought about. As a gay man spend as little time thinking about lesbian sexuality as possible, honestly, I think.
Yeah, I imagine.
I mean, it's not really something that I would have ever considered, and that's why, honestly, when I went to the website, when I went to Wet for Her's website, the differences in appearances between the sex toy... I'll tell you, my favorite sex toy that I saw advertised on the site is the one that looks like a sports sock. And for the listeners, it doesn't really look like a sports sock, but it has like the coloring of like a tube sock, and it's considered the sporty version. And I was just like, okay, that plays certainly to a lesbian stereotype, you know, the sporty girl who like, I want my dildo to look like an athletic sock. You know.
Yeah.
Where do you come up with ideas like that?
This is a partner company that is called BS. This is a Spanish company that there are lesbian girls also doing by hand the dildos. They are poor by hand, and you have the rainbow also, which is a dildo with the rainbow flag on it. Did you see it? This one.
I did not see that one. I guess I was so taken by the sock that I just didn't notice the rainbow.
But yeah, there's the rainbow one also. It's black with the rainbow flag on it, which is pretty cool also.
One of the things that is advertised strongly about your products is that they're not silicone-based. And I was wondering if there are medical reasons or preferential reasons for not silicone-based products.
Yes, yeah, yes, they are 100% silicone.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, yes, they are.
Okay. So I was under the impression that it said that they were not silicone-based.
Okay.
So.
No, they are 100% silicone-based. And, it's better. Yeah, and medical grade, yeah.
Oh, okay, very nice. So medical grade silicone, so.
Yeah.
That means that they are washable and all of these things.
Exactly. So it means that, I don't know if I can explain it in English. It means that no bacteria can go inside the dildo because the silicone is like really firm. And if you wash it, then no bacteria is going to go inside, which means if they can go inside, they can go outside another day.
Right. That it can just pop up. Next thing you know, it's in your vagina.
Ugh. Exactly.
The worst. That's the worst when it happens.
Yeah.
Do you have products also that accompany your line of sex toys that, for example, taking care of them and, like, washing them and all of those things? Those things would seem like they would be go hand in hand.
Can you repeat?
Yeah. I mean, I know that some sex toy lines, for example, on our podcast, we have a sponsoring company, Swiss Navy Premium Lubes, and they have a line of products that are specifically for cleaning sex toys to make sure that they are bacteria free and or well preserved and taken care of for the lasting quality of your products.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you guys have a similar product available.
Yes, we do. We do have a cleaning for sex toys also. It's just like the same as the Swiss Navy. It's almost the same. Otherwise, you can clean it just with soap. Or if you really want to clean it, then you can boil it in water, like 3 minutes, and then it will become clean, very clean.
Oh my God! That is something that you do not want your mom walking in on for sure.
Like nice dinner tonight.
Like oh, but don't mind that, mom. We're just boiling the dildos.
Yeah. Cleaning them.
Exactly. So besides the internet, where are the primary places that you market your products?
Today we do a lot of, organic advertising, I would say, with Google. We do a lot of... We did also some advertising with some lesbian website and magazine, lesbian magazine. But we sponsor some events and some prides. Like for prides, we like to give to send some giveaways for the volunteers or, you know, for the raffles and any events where promoters needs to have some products, so we're happy, really happy to give some giveaways free to help the LGBT community to have parties, events, and prides.
Well, you need to like ship us over some dildos. I want to see what the difference is in person between like the male-based products and female-based products, because I'm wondering. If a female-based product could almost feel better in some capacities than male-based products.
Sure, I can. No problem.
I mean...
We'll be happy. Just the thing is, I will have to send you a large size for sure.
Uh-huh.
Because the small size for lesbian is really, like,
petite.
We have all the sizes... that are like the small size is really like one or two fingers, so it's not very large for as the lesbian couples are not used to do a lot of penetration, then they cannot have large dildos. So our small dildos are really small, the medium is more for small, and etc. And I know that for the guys, I did a pride with a booth, and we had so much fun with some gay guys because they were looking at the size of the dildos, and they were just like having so much fun, and they were saying even the large is too small for me. It was really funny.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard this term, Alice, because it's a hot dog down a hallway.
That's it. Lesbian don't, they have smaller vagina than straight girls.
I would imagine so. Like, I mean, if sexuality is not entirely based on the concept of penetration and there's no male involved, you can choose the size and presumably what straight men think it takes to pleasure a woman, as you said at the very beginning, is not accurate for what it takes to pleasure a woman. They don't need to feel all of that extra.
Exactly. Yeah, correct.
Oh, my goodness. I'm kind of embarrassed because I don't even know. What this reminds me of, honestly, is I did this YouTube video one time about how to draw on cleavage, you know, as a drag performer. I did this video to show how to create the illusion of cleavage. And I legitimately had no idea about even the actual correct terminology to describe areas of the breast. I had no idea. And I feel the same way. I'm like, I don't know how to describe a vagina or how to describe what pleasures it. So 100% I am a full representation of what you're saying, that specifically certain kinds of men have no idea what it would take to pleasure a woman and or even begin to. There's just a completely different perspective on what it takes to pleasure a woman for the straight community than what it does for the lesbian community.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's true. It's not because I'm a straight girl that I will know exactly what my partner as a man understand the pleasure and of what he likes, but I cannot feel how he feels, you know, the pleasure. That's something totally different.
Right. And that is one of the benefits that your company provides. It's two women who both understand the pleasure that the other would receive because they've experienced it personally.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, lesbian pleasure is not the same as straight woman pleasure. We like different things. Like maybe straight girls love penetration and I don't know whatsoever. But lesbian likes penetration, but maybe in a different way. Softer or maybe, I don't know, you know, just like, it might be different. It's not fully the same.
So your products involve dildos and vibrators, I'm assuming. I know that.
So we do dildos and we do harnesses. Brief harnesses, drug harnesses, drug strap. If you go to the strap-on harness, you can see the boxer brief harness, which is really new for the last, I would say, 3-4 years, where now you can wear it under your jeans. So this means that you can strap at any moment. You don't have...
at any moment. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, now you can pack also for the female to male. So this means that they can pack also. So the industry has a bit changed in the last 5 years, I would say. There's more, this is where we were talking before about internet. New products has come out for niche market. And like the F2M can find now new products for them also. They can buy it.
This interview has said the word dildo more than I can promise you this entire podcast has said in 2 full years of episodes. So you have changed the face of our listeners.
Wow.
So what is the website address that people can go to find out more about Wet for Her and where to order it?
So the website address is wetforher.com.
And how did you choose the name Wet for Her?
I know the brief for the company name. We wanted something that sounds lesbian, of course, and needs to fit in the sex toy industry. So so I don't know how we came out with Wet for Her, but I think it described quite well who we are. I know the brief, but I can't remember how we get it to Wet for Her.
Well, Alice, I'm grateful that I got an opportunity to talk to you. This has been enlightening and hilarious and informative, and our podcast is a transgender woman and a drag queen. That's the drag queen's obviously me. And we really try on as often as possible to have the representation of women, specifically lesbian women, on our show. And I'll tell you that Mona has been instrumental. Mona, your publicist, has been instrumental in helping make sure that we have women's voices reflected for our listeners around the world. And, you know, the fact that I, as I said, got to speak with a Belgian sex toy making lesbian is something definitely that I would never have necessarily imagined that I would do during the course of my career, but it's something that I jumped at. Is she sent me information about the product, and I just wrote back, yes! Exclamation point.
Thank you, Paul, for that. Thank you.
So, thank you for joining us, and I wish you guys the best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the interview.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Alice Duroc with Wet for Her. She is a Belgian entrepreneur based in France, and she helms Wet for Her. You can check out Wet for Her at wetforher.com. It is a lesbian sex toy company with products created by lesbian women for lesbian women. I probably sounded facetious when I was saying that I'm really grateful to have talked to her and felt enlightened, but that is not the case at all. Lesbian sexuality is something that I really think very limited amounts about, and for obvious reasons, but we really always try, you know, as producer of this show, I certainly always want to include information for our lesbian listeners. I don't know what the number of our listeners are that are the number is that is lesbian or identifies as lesbian, or even for that matter, that identify as women. But this sounds like a product line that has been thoughtfully created for the community by the community. And that is something that I fully support. I say so often on our podcast, if we do not support our own, how can we expect anyone else to support us in return? You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar, and Pearl Tees, and I will be back with more right after this.
Hi, it's Matt Matthews, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
To stay abreast of all that's happening in the LGBTQ world down under, visit Australia's premier LGBTQ website and online destination. It's GuideToGay.com. That's right, GuideToGay.com carries all the news, entertainment, and features you could possibly want about what's going on in Australia. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
Hallelujah, this is Shangela, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, honey. Hallelujah.
Clock the bag.
Clock the bag.
Clock the shoe.
Clock the shoe.
Now punch the clock. It's time to work.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. This is Poyo Del Mar. You'll probably remember, if you are a frequent listener, that last episode we had on with us none other than Miss Shoshana Bean, and she was talking about her viral hit with fellow Broadway star Cynthia Erivo. Their cover of Taylor Swift is burning up the internet. And after a fantastic 45-minute chat, I encourage you, after listening to this episode, go back and check out last week if you missed it. But after a fantastic 45-minute interview, I hung up the phone and went about my business, only to see the phone ring a few minutes later, and it was Shoshana calling back. There was more that she wanted to talk about. She had forgotten something that she wanted to say about her co-star in that video, Cynthia Erivo. And from there, a whole new interview developed. I decided to save it for a second part because we discussed some information that she has never shared before. Now we take you back to part two of our interview with Shoshana Bean, spilling the beans about her starring role in Broadway's Wicked, where she replaced Idina Menzel as the lead of Elphaba. Here is Shoshana Bean on Party Foul Radio. So is there anything else that you would like to say before we go?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to your comment about Cynthia. You're like, can we just talk real quick about how amazing Cynthia is? And I just wanted to just say really quickly, coming from the theater and being like a super, just innately my personality, I'm a perfectionist. And then being in the theater, you know, we have to hit certain marks and there are certain rules of being on stage, and there's just sort of this like quest for perfection that happens. You know, you have to say the same lines all the time and, you know, hit the same notes, and there's an accuracy, this like quest for accuracy and perfection, at least for me, was my experience in the theater. And then I left the theater and I've only been doing my own music for like 10, 12 years now. And then I found this freedom, right? This total like free of judgment, self-judgment, audience, like this freedom of self-expression that I had never found on stage, really. Then when I've come back to the theater with like Beaches or Funny Girl, like trying to marry those two worlds that I found, you know, trying to find that exactness to be able to do 8 shows a week, but then also find the freedom in it from what I've learned on my own. And when I saw Cynthia in Color Purple, all that to say, she was like that turning point for me where I was like, I can do all of that. I can find an exact performance. And she gave me permission, essentially, to take that freedom I'd found in my own life and bring that to stage, if that makes sense. I was like, there it is. That's the lightning in the bottle. The, like, strategic, structured, specific work of an actress, and then the freedom of an artist who's discovering things and breaking the rules. I remember she did that song at the end, you know, I'm Here.
Uh-huh.
And she turned all the way up stage when she started the final note. And I'm like, you can't, you know what I mean? In the rules of theater, you can't do that. You can't turn your back on the audience for the biggest note of the song. And yes, she did. And yes, it worked. And it was incredibly powerful. And I'm like, that is redefining the rules of the stage for me. And it was just like, that was so powerful. And, you know, I knew her years before that, but I had not seen her play the role, you know? So I already knew she was powerful and special and incredible. And I knew when I saw the show, it was going to be a magical experience. But I didn't know that it was going to be an education, an emancipation almost for me, permission to like, yeah, you can do all the things you do. There's not a separate world or separate rules for your stage life versus your independent life. You know what I mean?
But
so I just wanted to like give a shout out.
Yeah, but doesn't it take a really special individual for the theater community to even give them that kind of permission?
I don't think that it's given. I think she just took it. I doesn't mean, yes, she is extraordinary. Not everyone can do what Cynthia does. But she didn't ask permission. That's just it. She just did it. And when you do it and it works, no one can say anything about it. Someone else could have tried that and it would be like, it's not a powerful choice. It doesn't work. But with Cynthia, it works. So I'm not saying I can go do what Cynthia does and be like, but Cynthia did it. Like, it's got to be authentic to you and work for you and the, you know, it can't be inauthentic, but I think a lot of people, especially because I teach and I see a lot of the young performers coming up, a lot of people just stifle their innate authentic instincts because they think it's not the right thing to do. And what Cynthia doesn't do, stifle her authentic instincts because they're hers and they work for her. And that's why you and I and everyone else who saw that show is eating it up with a spoon.
Right.
Because it's real. Yeah, I do think it takes someone special, but what makes her so special is her knowledge of herself and her fearlessness in being able to express that.
Well, which brings us full circle to you saying that she's the one who was like, no, we're going to be absolutely still through this whole video.
Yeah, and I was like, you're crazy. I'll try it.
Wow, it works.
Yep, she and I are real different that way. And I think, you know, I tell her, I said, every time I'm with you, I learn something. But I'm the person who's always second-guessing whether what I'm doing is enough, you know? Just, and this, like, again, this constant quest to try to please everybody. And Cynthia's not coming from a place of pleasing anybody.
Out of curiosity, was that something that was inherent in you before you walked into replacing one of the most iconic musical theater performers of a modern generation in one of the most iconic roles? I mean, stepping in to replace Idina Menzel in Wicked is like, you have to imagine that there's a huge part of that that is going to ingrain in you that there's a generation of people who expect you to do what she did.
Well, that's a whole nother can of worms. The answer to that is no, I was not that person before Wicked. I was fearless and brave and tenacious and ferocious. There was not a part of me that cared about how I might look. And I don't know, there's something about not just replacing her. People were lovely, so that wasn't the thing. Something about the way that it all happens, me going into the show, I've never really, like, I mean, my friends know this and stuff like that, but I've never really talked about the fact that, like, you know, I wasn't their first choice.
Ooh.
And I knew that. And for some reason, because of that, I never quite let myself own the victory of having the role. Does that make sense? And I think it did a number on my psyche and my confidence and my belief in myself. Even though, like, I had a lovely run with that show. I had my amazing year on Broadway. I had the tour. But something about it, I just never felt like I deserved it. And then after that, I feel like I never shook it until really recently. Yeah, I mean, they wanted Eden. This is who they wanted. And she was in Brooklyn and they couldn't have her. So they, you know, they auditioned other people and couldn't find what they wanted either. And I can't believe I'm telling you this shit. And then I gave my notice as a standby. And I had let it all go in my mind that it wasn't going to happen for me. And one night, Adina went out sick. And I went on, and I'd already been on for her, but I went on with that sort of, like, effort attitude because I knew I was leaving and I wasn't under the microscope to take over anymore, you know. They already told me it wasn't going to happen. And this is another example of, like, just being who you are and not worrying about how you're being perceived, right? So I went on with that sort of F-all attitude, and Mark Flatt happened to be in the house that night. And the next day I got the call. So, you know, I think it was, I don't know, I just think that some people take an opportunity, a situation like that, and they go, I'm going to show you, you know, which I think is my little Cynthia. You know what I mean? She's had her challenges and her struggles, and her instinct is to say, I'm going to show you. And for some reason, mine wasn't. Mine was like, I'm just going to do my job. I'm not, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's such a weird thing that the mind does, consciously or subconsciously. You know what I mean? And it's taken me a big chunk of time, I'd say pretty much all of my 30s, to build back to being like, remember who I was in my 20s? What happened to her? And you just get, like, these little heartbreaks, enough of them along the way. And if you let them, it's like death by paper cut. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, these little cuts add up to, like, you're bleeding to death. And I was like, I want to be as confident and powerful and ferocious as I was in my 20s. Like, all that is over. And Wicked was an incredible gift and has given me an incredible family, a platform. And, yeah.
So I'm sitting here, Shoshana, though, and what I'm hearing from you, and I do understand how it can undermine one's confidence to feel that you were not to know that you were not the first choice, maybe not even the second choice per se. But there's so many people in the industry who I don't think they would care if they were the 12th choice, as long as they got to walk on and be that lead role for a year on Broadway, they wouldn't care how that happened.
I know. It really, I never shook it. And that was my cross to bear. Do you know what I mean? But I think that's me and myself. That was my self-sabotage. That was me not allowing myself to walk in the victory of playing one of the greatest roles ever written for women. That was me not allowing myself to own my own power and be like, You are the choice that they made. Do you know what I mean? They chose you, and you are the one doing it, and you deserve to be here. You know, I wouldn't allow that for myself, and that's me. That was my lesson to learn and, like, my damage to heal. Do you know what I mean? But I don't say that that's, like, it's that and then all of the things that happened in the years that followed. But we all choose how we interpret things and how we internalize things. and how much, ultimately, how much joy we allow ourselves to experience. And for whatever reason, I wasn't going to give that to myself. I wasn't going to let myself really own that. And that'll be my, not my regret, but that'll be my, what I have to live with, you know? No, I learned my lesson because I'll never allow myself not to celebrate my victories ever again.
Right. I was going to say, that's your opportunity to make sure that you never do that again. You know?
Ever.
It's,
and that's my plea to every kid out there who's listening. Not kid, not even kid. Like, you know, all of us do that. We all have these ways in which we, like, tap our joy. You know, whether we always happen to get sick right before something big or our back always goes out or whatever. That's just us, like, finding our, you know, our subconscious, finding some way to make sure that we don't really get to live in this amazing moment. So that was mine, well, among many others.
This drive that you describe for perfectionism is something that I think many people, though, understand, because it's the mentality, whether you were the kid who got an A on your test and your parents told you it should have been an A plus.
Yeah.
Whatever it might be that you are working to transform your body and you, mm-hmm. you lose 20 pounds, but all you can see is the fact that there's still a dimple here or a ripple there or whatever it is, you know, your situation happened to come on legitimately and literally the biggest stage on your chosen profession in, as you said, the role that people would shove a stranger down the stairs to get.
Yeah, I had to go big or go home, right? God had to get my attention in a big way.
I mean, let's be honest. Elphaba in Wicked is a role people would shove their best friend down the stairs to get, much less a stranger. I mean,
I'm aware.
So,
I'm aware.
Yeah, I mean, wow, that is really impactful to hear that that experience had such a lingering effect on you.
Yeah, and I didn't figure it out until about a year and some ago. I didn't figure it out. I didn't know why I had such a, like, I didn't know where my fire went. Like, I didn't know, and I feel like I was doing enough and working hard enough to be like, I am doing it. But I was, again, playing safe, like playing, you know, in my comfort zone, venues that I knew I could sell out, but, you know, with people that I knew I could work with, like never really stepping outside and being terrified, which I feel like in your 20s is kind of where you live. You know, when I first moved to New York, we, you know, you're just auditioning, you hope you're going to get a job, or then I get thrown into Wicked and I'm like, oh my God, I hope I can do this. You know what I mean? It's just a bunch of like treading water and hoping that you can catch your next breath and stay afloat. And then you kind of figure out the system enough to just survive and do well enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, no, but it's not enough anymore. And in that discovery of all that, I was like, what happened to, like, me dreaming big? What happened to, like, my big goals? What happened, you know? But your confidence gets shaken enough times and you kind of just retreat, you know what I mean? And I didn't retreat to the extent of not doing things, but I retreated enough that I felt like I couldn't fail. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you played everything in the safe zone.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, you won't find me in a lead role on Broadway anytime soon. But what I can relate to in what you have said is the idea that there have been many times in my life where whatever level of success it is that I've achieved, there is a, like, a nagging part of me inside that always feels like I'll be discovered as a fraud. What? like somebody will, you know, pull back the curtain and I'm not the wizard, I'm just the man. Literally, you know, kind of you to use that metaphor from your own experience, but I felt like that many times, so I can understand and really, to whatever degree it's possible, empathize with the fact that you achieved what should have been like the crowning moment of your career to that point and couldn't appreciate it fully.
Ugh, you couldn't have said it better. But you know what's funny? You say that out loud, and I bet you whoever hears this or reads this or whatever is feeling the same way. Most people feel like they're faking it till they make it.
Right.
And what I realized is, if you feel like you're a fraud and you're faking it, you're in the right place. Because if you know exactly what you're doing and you can, like, read the steps before you even get there and, like, you're walking through it in your sleep because you're such a pro at it, you're in the wrong place. Because you're not growing and you're not learning. You've been there. You've done it. You're doing the same thing again. So that place of feeling like you're literally just barely making it and you're a fraud, that's where you're supposed to live, I think. Because that's where you're discovering and figuring it out in every moment and trying to make it work. And, like, that's where the creation and, like, the real life is. That's where it is. But we, like, you know, I was so uncomfortable in that I wanted to be in places that I felt like I knew what I was doing. But, yes, ultimately you said it. I was robbed of fully experiencing and appreciating one of the greatest achievements of my life. And I say that, I don't say that, like, I mean, I was there, I appreciated it, I loved it, I had a ball. It's not that. I didn't miss it. But I didn't experience it as fully as I could have, or would have if it happened today, you know?
But so much of what you're talking about also, I think, is, like, internal perception, like, internalized self-perception versus external perception. Because quite often, I think that when any of us, in no matter what our profession might be, in your case, it's very different because there's a literal spotlight put on you and, you know, you're doing it in front of the world. But when people perceive us to be, at the pinnacle of success in any industry, I think that it takes a very special kind of person who probably most of us wouldn't like very much to be like, you know what? You're right. I am the best. I'm the best damn thing that's going. Everybody in the world can believe it, but we don't necessarily believe it because part of us, going back to that thing we talked about earlier, we're taught that that's not okay to embrace our own success sometimes. We're taught that it's not okay to say, you're right, like, I'm quite good at what I do. I'm maybe not the best, but I'm quite good at it.
Yeah, I don't know why that's so hard for us.
I think it's human nature.
I don't know why.
And I think it's much easier, honestly, with everything in life to look back, you know, you're looking back 10 years and you're looking at what you accomplished and saying, you know what, whether I was the first choice, the second choice, or the fifth choice, I was the choice they made. And it's not that they couldn't have replaced you. They kept you for a full year on the grandest stage of all and then sent you across the country to represent what they do. So,
he couldn't have told me that. I would have been like, I'm just a replacement. I'm just here to do the job. I'm a cog in the wheel. I wouldn't have said, like, yes. Isn't that fantastic? I wouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
I remember Barrett Foa, who I moved to New York with at the same time. He was one of my best friends. We did Godspell together. We were very close. He took over for John in Avenue Q, and I took over for Adina at the same time. And I remember him hitting me up and being like, isn't this exciting? We both just took over in Legal on Broadway and, like, hit shows at the same time. Isn't this exciting? And I was like, I don't know. Or he was like, we're starring in it. And I was like, I don't know about you. I'm just a replacement. And I remember him being like, and we talked about it years later. He's like, I couldn't believe you were, like, downplaying what we were doing. And I was like, that's how I viewed it. I was just a replacement.
Your fans.
And I remember, like,
from that production are going to be shocked to hear that you felt this way.
I can't believe I'm telling you this.
I'm telling everyone. They're going to believe it. They're not going to believe it, but they're going to believe it.
Oh, well, there it is.
But
I mean, I don't know what good it does being my secret. Like, I just feel like this is my new play. It's like nobody talked about this stuff. No one said, you're going to feel like shit sometimes. No one said, you know, you're going to resent your job. No one said that. So you have these feelings and you feel terrible. I remember when I saw Ben Platt and Sierra Hansen. I hadn't seen that kid since he was a little child, if we even ever really met when I was in Wicked. You know, that's Mark Platt's son, the producer of Wicked. But I, because of that whole situation, and Mark Platt is like I credit him with, like, you know, changing my life. He's the one who said, no, it has to be Shauna. He's the one who gave me my whole career as it stands, you know, essentially. So to me, the Platts are like family, you know. When I saw Ben in the show and I saw what he was doing,
And what he's doing is, like, Alphabet times 50 billion. You know, what we did as Alphabet is a small thing compared to what Evan Hansen is. But I saw him, and I thought, no one understands what that kid is going through backstage. No one gets it. Offstage. No one understands that sometimes he hates his life. Like, you know what I mean? So I sent him a note, and I sent him a package backstage with all of the things that everyone needs to survive. And I sent him a note, and I was like, yo, I know what you're going through. And from a smaller perspective, I know what you're going through, and it's okay. You got to take care of yourself. You got to do what you need, you know. And he was, like, so appreciative that, because sometimes you go through that, and you're like, I shouldn't be ungrateful right now. This is the best job in the world, but it's hard, you know. And I think that moment made me realize, because I second-guessed myself. I'm like, don't bother this kid. Like, he's fine. You don't know what he's going through, but something intuitively in me was like, you need to say something, because no one told me. You know, like, Shoshana, this is going to suck sometimes. People are going to talk shit about you online. They're going to want you on stage, and they're going to want you off stage. They're going to, you know, you're going to run yourself ragged doing your job and other jobs, you know, when you're not on stage. Like, no one warned you about that. They didn't warn you about the strain that you can put on your voice if you try to please your producers and be there every show, all this stuff. And I just think it's really important that us, that those of us who've been there and done it, share the information, especially because we can now. We didn't have all the social media that we have now. When I started in Wicked, we had YouTube.
Right.
We didn't even really have MySpace, you know?
MySpace.
So now that we have the ability to share all of that, I think we should, because God forbid some little girl listening to this is like, I just want to be Alphaba on Broadway. And she gets there and she's like, this sucks. Why didn't Shoshana Bean tell me it sucks? it doesn't suck all the time, but there are days that it sucks, and that is okay. It's part of the job, and you're not ungrateful, and you're not doing something wrong. That's just how it, that's the ebb and flow of it. And so I feel like, all that to say, my experience is selfish and a loss if I don't share that, like, I robbed myself of joy, and you should not do the same thing. When you get an opportunity, own it. Know that you are deserving of it, that things don't happen by accident, and be the best person and talent that you can be within it, you know? And that doesn't mean, like you said, walk around being like, I'm the best, I deserve this. There's humility, of course, but, like, it's okay to own it and be happy, and you deserve to have all of the happiness. And I didn't understand that back then.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you called back, because this is juicier than the first half.
Well, I was thinking about Cynthia, and I'm like, oh, my God, I can even say, like, in the way that she, just not even as my friend, but as, you know, just watching her as an audience member, like, how she changed, how she was, you know, I credit her and Grace Potter was sort of like, and Ben has been a masterclass as well, watching them, like, change the game for me, you know?
Yeah.
She deserves to have that shine.
Yeah, Grace Potter's incredible, too, so.
She's on my album.
Oh, I love her. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. She's amazing.
Well,
anyway, I'm done boring you.
No, you haven't bored me at all. And I'm a very casual fan of Broadway, but my best friend from high school lives in Jersey and drives over and sees shows on Broadway all the time. And so I'm just going to text him casually, like, oh, by the way, was on the phone for over an hour with Shoshana Bean. Well, gotta go. Bye. Just to, you know, rub it in.
I love it.
And
it was such a joy to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And I will, I hope we can stay in touch. And when the album drops in February, let's have you back if you're willing. Come back and chit chat some more.
Oh my gosh, if you're willing, I would love that. Please.
Yeah, let's do it. Sounds fantastic.
Awesome.
So I will talk to you in a couple months. Happy holidays.
You too, baby. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everyone. That wraps our interview with Shoshana Bean. You can find her now on YouTube. Just go look her up and subscribe to her channel so you not only will get her cover of Taylor Swift's I Did Something Bad with Cynthia Erivo, but you will also stay up to date on new information as it becomes available about her upcoming album, Spectrum, which is going to be available in February of 2018.
Whoa, that was an impactful interview. We got real deep. The first half of the interview, again, go back and listen to episode 95 to catch the first half of it, was great. She talked about her LGBT fans, her decision-making around this new Taylor Swift cover. So much was covered in the first half. But the second half, I never expected to hear from somebody who played such a huge role as Elphaba on Broadway, replacing an icon like Idina Menzel, would allow that experience to somehow undermine her self-confidence going forward. It was really enlightening, and it was extremely personal. So thank you, Shoshana Bean, for calling in and being part of the Party Foul Radio family. Now it's time to take a quick break, and we will be back with more of this episode as Pearl Tees and I wrap up episode 96. You're listening to Party Foul Radio, and I am Pollo Del Mar. Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine. Left Magazine is Northern California's most beautiful LGBTQ news, entertainment, and nightlife publication. Pick it up for celebrity features, opinions, headline news, and beautiful photo pictorials. Copies of Left Magazine are available in the Castro District of San Francisco or online at liveleft.com. That's liveleft.com. Daddy's Barbershop is also a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. Voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards, Daddy's Barbershop is located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro. That's Daddy's Barbershop, 4102 19th Street at Castro. Get your hair cut by Arlen, Jesse, and the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop today. And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poy Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
We just heard from Shoshana Bean. Once again, by all means, go over to YouTube and look up Shoshana Bean and Cynthia Erivo covering Taylor Swift's I Did Something Bad.
If you haven't already.
You're going to thank me, though. It is so beautiful. I just love it. And I performed it at Lookout when we were together.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody came up to me and was like, oh my God, I love that version of that song. And I was like, well, the reason I'm out performing it is because I want people to hear it and be like, who was that?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be like, I'm going to help them. I'm going to help them out, girl. I'm going to get them one view at a time.
I love a good cover artist, girl.
So, and next week, I will be interviewing the other half of that duet, Tony Award-winning actress, Cynthia Erivo. So many of you might have seen her during her star turn on Broadway in The Color Purple. We will be talking to her and much, much more. She's like, honey, she is the real deal.
Right.
Child. So that is coming. Also next week on our episode, we're going to have Canadian artist Rhea May. Look up her version or look up her popular song, Bend. It's been a big hit for her in Canada, which is her home country. Canada's her hometown, girl. The whole country is her hometown. But she's going to be on talking about what it's like to be an out pop artist. And she's beginning to make some crossover success here in the United States. I'm very excited. And of course, as I always tell y'all, if we do not support out artists, why can't we blame anybody else for not doing it?
Right.
So get over there and check her out.
What are you getting into this weekend?
This weekend, I don't even know. It feels like there's a lot of stuff going on this weekend, but I can't even remember what the hell it is. I don't have anything on my schedule for Saturday. I might pop over. I think this Saturday is Mascara, the sober drag show that supports Castro Country Club with MGM Grand. I might pop over there and see what's going on there. And then Sunday for sure, I am with, oh my God, you guys, Pearl was doing this thing. I thought she was massaging her breasts.
No, I'm stretching, girl.
She was stretching. I thought she was over there, like, pushing her boobs together. I was like, what is going on? Oh my God.
I'm in a moment.
Jesus. Anyway, so I'm definitely going to be at the Port Bar in Oakland with Carne Asada on Sunday night. It's going to be a share tribute or a share-related holiday evening. So we've got to either perform holiday songs or share songs. So I'm going to be doing a little bit of sharing, and I don't know. I don't know what else. I don't know what is to come, but it'll probably be yet another very, very busy weekend. This week has been kind of grueling because I've put out, this podcast is the third podcast I've recorded in 3 days. So I've done a podcast a day for 3 days. So,
all right. Well, I think it's this Thursday, but this Thursday,
it is this Thursday. You're talking about Amber's thing?
No, I don't know what that
is. Oh, yes, you do. Remember Amber?
No.
Okay, well, go on.
So this Thursday, I think I will be at Lungo Mare with Maxine Pat for Time of the Month.
How dare she not ask me?
But the thing is, I don't know. She did say the 14th, but I thought her show was the third Thursday of the month.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe it's because it's around the holidays. I'm not sure. I gotta check in. That's over in Oakland, you guys. And then I will be over at the new brunch show on Sunday at Biso. Or Bisou, however you say it.
Bisou.
I've never stepped foot in there, and it always looks like a really
It's very cute.
Is it?
It's cute, but
I have always thought it was very small.
It does look rather small.
But that's where you guys can catch me this weekend. I might be over at Asia. I'm not sure. But yes, it's going to be the last weekend before Christmas weekend? Yeah.
It is the last weekend before Christmas weekend. Well, yeah, the weekend, Christmas is going to be on a Monday, bitch.
Yeah, Christmas Eve is on Sunday.
Sunday.
Which means New Year's Eve is also on a Sunday. All right.
It is. All right. So, yeah, that is what...
What are you looking at? Why does that guy...
Whatever. So I have a text thread that's called Shady Ladies.
Bitches.
And yeah, literally.
Sandra's in it, isn't she?
Uh-huh. Yeah, she sure is. But it's three of my drag daughters, and we will constantly be sending each other like
some shady shit.
Yeah, all kinds of shady stuff. Like last night, like I sent the group this picture, like I'm on Tinder, you guys, and Tinder's constantly trying to like...
app.
Tinder is not a hoe app.
Girl, we are not going to go through this again. Yes, it is.
No, well, I don't think Tinder's a hoe app, but it did suggest this person to me.
Oh my God, that looks like Angina, kind of, sort of. With a bigger bottom lip.
I don't even know.
And no eyebrows.
I mean, it like...
I don't even mean a clown like that, but Jesus.
I mean, yeah, it's like one of those things, and then...
Oh, she got bigger titties than me, bitch.
And it's not a she.
I know.
That's the problem.
I mean, some people are into that kind of thing, you know? Oh my God, ew, what was that? Did he have teeth in his ass? Oh, it's Photoshop.
Yes, so this guy...
Oh, that scared the shit out of me, girl.
This guy sent me a picture of his ass. And this is a guy, Pearl, you met him. Not, like, you met him because he gave me his number Saturday at the brunch show. And we barely got to talk. And
I'm sure I met him that day.
I'm sure. And then we exchanged a few messages. And then he sent me, it was like fucking talking to somebody on Grindr. I was like, we met in real life. But we exchanged like a handful of text messages. And all of a sudden I get like, boop, 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 bing, 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 bing. And it's like, I look at my phone and it's like six pictures of him naked. And I'm like, what the fuck? And one of them, you guys, is him laying on a bed, stark naked, spreading his ass cheeks. So I went and photoshopped a busted mouth, like this ugly, horrible, but it looks almost real.
It's disgusting, yeah.
Onto it. It was like...
Do you have a picture of his face? I want to see what he looks like to see if I remember him.
Well, I do, but I don't want to like... Well, hold on.
Girl, you might as well.
I guess I might as well. So anyway, it's just... I don't fucking stand that. It's like, why... Gay men are, like, so nasty like that.
Yeah, I can't mess with them.
Why would you, after barely knowing me and, like, trying to hold a conversation or whatever, decide that you're going to send me, like, pictures of your dirty hole? I mean, it wasn't dirty, but...
Oh.
He's got a banging body.
I don't... I may have met him. Oh, I think I met him in passing really quick.
Yes.
Like, I just said hi or something.
He's got a banging body. He's a beautiful guy. But it's just like, girl, you don't love yourself. Like, don't even know somebody, and you're sending out every photograph of yourself. And
you know you're not the only person who's seen
it. Oh, my God. That's the other thing. That's one of the reasons, Pearl. I'm telling you, that's why I do not engage. Like, I hope that after that experience with the principal and, like, hearing me talk about it and that you recognize it, like, I don't do the HOAP thing. Like, I don't use them as HOAPs. Like, I'll meet somebody on there. I'll say hi to them. But when people send me dirty pictures, the first thing I know is, girl, you sent this to, like, a dozen other people today. Right. Like, you're just wanting to see, you're looking for the first thing that's going to crawl up that hole.
Right.
It is not going to be me, boo, because I'm no man Pam.
Ugh.
I just love myself too much for that. Like, I would rather be single than have to, like, deal with some pass around Patty.
Yeah, some pass around Patty.
I mean, like, that's really what it comes down to. I'd rather be single than have to do all that. By the way, really quickly, since you guys heard the start, middle, and whatever of that dating experience that I was having for a while with the guy that you met. So he ghosts me, right? We went out all these times.
He ghosted you.
He basically ghosts me. I responded back and said, look, because he made some excuse like, oh, I've been really busy. I'm going to be busy for the next few weeks or whatever. So I said, it's obvious you don't have time to continue what was started. So the ball's in your court. You know, hit me up if you want, whatever. Just left it. Well, like a week or something passed. While we were backstage at the drag show on Saturday, he texts me some long, like, I'm really sorry. I've been going through some things emotionally. I just don't think that I have time. Like, I just don't think I'm ready for us yet or something like that. I didn't mean to hurt you. And I wrote back. I was like, well, first of all, I appreciate you writing me back or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that
this was too late, boo.
We went on 4 dates.
Right.
There was no us. I was trying to get to know you. And I said, that's why I don't just jump in bed with random people.
Right.
Because I would have felt a whole different way if you and I had been engaging some sexual conduct or whatever. And then your ass would say, oh, I don't. Because then I'd have felt used.
Right.
And he was like, I hope we can be friends. I was like, I will always be cordial when I see you. Yeah. And when I turned to Carney Asada and I was like, I will be just as pleasant to him as any other fan that I have. Like, are you going to be my friend? No, but you can admire what I do. When I'm pleasant to you, you better hand me a dollar bill in my cleavage and keep it moving.
That's the difference between a real friend, you guys.
No, girl. And that's the difference between an acquaintance and a friend. No, I don't want to be your friend.
Right.
And what I told Carney was simple, like, it's not even about being vindictive. It's about the fact that you say you want to be friends with me, but
you're going to try to get in my pants.
But besides the fact that, like, if one of my friends and I were in the middle of, like, something developing, like, not even romantically, but if we were, like, planning on something or had been hanging out or, like, whatever, and then all of a sudden the motherfucker ghosts me for 2 weeks.
Right.
I'd be like, I'm not thinking that we're friends to begin with. Like, I don't need friends that are like that. I want friends who are like, hey, I don't want to leave you hanging, but you're not treating me like a friend right now. And if this is your habit, keep it to your damn self, because I do not need that habit.
Right. So. Nope. Not at all.
Ooh. On that note, you guys, it is time to wrap this up, because do you want to go to Daddy's Barbershop's holiday party with me tonight?
What are they doing?
It's just like they're just gathering it. At Fable in the Castro. I'm gonna go there and eat.
What's Fable?
It's this cute little restaurant in the Castro.
I would have loved to, but I have, like, crab and mussels and stuff waiting for me at home.
Well, she got crabs.
Shut up, bitch.
And mussels. You guys heard it.
And they're really, like, they're
enormous, because they're biting her right now, and I can see it. I'm
whatever, bitch. They're really masculine over there at Daddy's Barbershop.
And that's the women.
I don't mind masculine women. I'm
going to kill myself by accident. I'm going to choke to death on my own jokes.
Oh, please. Please. And I don't know. I just... when there's not a slither of feminine energy in sight, girl, it just...
See, that's why we miss Evan Graham, girl. He was the most feminine thing. Samoa, that femme queen was up in there. Oh, hey, girl!
Oh, I live. That so, made me happy.
But, yeah, I mean... What?
That was just too much. I can only imagine. Anyway.
Oh, my God. She was. She'd be, like, cutting hair, and she looks like a bear. Uh-huh. But, like, she'll be cutting her hair, and, like, somebody will walk by, she'll be like, "Hey, girl! Oh, hey, queen! What's up, bitch? Oh, God!" Like,
oh, I think I saw her walk in as we were leaving the last time we were there.
No, because she lives in Spain now.
Oh, shit. Never mind.
Anyway, so I'm going to go. I just, you know, the boys are so good to me, and we love Daddy's Barbershop. They are coming back on board as a sponsor for the second year in a row.
All right. Tell them all I said hello.
I will. They support my sock, toiletry, and underwear drive, the Sock It to Homelessness 3, which is now underway. Hopefully, I'm still got my fingers crossed that Fitness SF is going to jump on board for the last 2 weeks of our drive to give their locations to us. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you guys, we gotta go, because, bitch, I gotta get across town before somebody eats up all my food.
Oh. Wait, is the food free?
Yeah, presumably. Last time I just showed up and they were just bringing me shit. I was like, oh, and that was at the end of the night, bitch, so I'm gonna get there early while the getting's good.
I heard that.
Sorry about your mussels and crabs. All right, you guys.
That's the end of this episode.
Yes, I'm Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease. Don't forget to follow us and like us on Facebook and Twitter.
At Party Foul Radio.
Bye.
We'll talk to you next week. Work, it's over. Work, it's over. Work, it's over.